Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. This is Annika Smith broadcasting here from the CSC in Seattle. And today we have Ladd Allen with Alestra Media on our show to talk about the new documentary film, Darwin's Dilemma. Ladd, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
We are just really delighted and got a chance to see the film at the premiere screening here in Seattle just a couple weeks ago, and we're really blown away by it. It's just amazing from this side of the screen. I can't imagine what it was like behind the scenes filming this. Now, this was a multi-year long process making this film. Is that correct?
It was indeed, yeah. There were times when we weren't blown away. Yeah, the long, arduous process these things often turn out to be, but it's, you know, we're happy with the final result, and all the challenges seem to sort of dissipate when you look at it, when you're done and you're happy with it. So.
As you have the finished, polished image, it's a wonderful product, and you should be very pleased. Kudos. How did this film come about?
Well, actually, I was thinking about that this morning. In 2001, we were working on Unlocking the Mystery of Life, which was the first major intelligent design project that we had gotten involved with our company. And at the time, Steve Meyer and I were working on the script, and we had discussion about including a segment in Unlocking the Mystery of Life, which basically deals with the arguments for design based on molecular biology. And we had thought about maybe including a brief segment on the Cambrian explosion in the film. But after a few days, it became very clear that that was way too big a story there to try to wedge into 8 or 10 minutes. And we made the decision that, you know, this is another film. This is in and of itself. And so the plan had always been to follow Unlocking the Mystery of Life with a film on astronomy and cosmology, and based on a book by J. Richards and Guillermo Gonzalez, Privileged Planet. We did that in 2004. We came out with that film. But then the long-range plan became a trilogy, really, that would include a full-blown film on the Cambrian explosion. And those three films would encompass most of the major arguments for design. And so it's been a project that has lasted about 9 years overall. We've done other things in between, but it's taken about 9 years to get to the finish point of the trilogy.
The pinnacle, so to speak.
Yeah.
So 2001, the idea was kicked about, and quickly you saw that it needed its own film. When did filming begin? Because, Privileged Planet was 2004. Were you working on this then, or?
No, we actually did a couple of other films unrelated to intelligent design between 2004, but it was about 2006 where we started work on this project. And at the time, it didn't have a title. It was the Cambrian Explosion Project. And so in 2006, there were some major location photography involved in China and in Canada. And so we went to southern China. It's one of the great Cambrian fossil sites in the world. We went there in the late spring of 2006, and then we went to the Burgess Shale in the Canadian Rockies, another very important fossil site, in the summer of 2006. So those were two big location shoots, and that's really when we started the photography. We actually were off of the film for about a year. We had another project that came that demanded it. We set the film aside for almost a year, started it in 2006, and worked on some other things, then came back to it really hard in 2008, 2009. And so there was a delay in there, and so it ended up being about a three-year project.
Wow. You mentioned doing the Burgess Shale in Canada and the other fossil dig in South China.
Right.
You, in your promotional material, it says that the filming went on location in 4 different continents. Now,
right.
besides Asia, North America, which in and of itself, that's a lot
right.
of location footage.
Right.
Where else was this filmed?
Well, we shot in Wales and in England. The Cambrian fossil, the Cambrian geological era was originally identified in the early 1800s in Wales, and Charles Darwin just graduated from Cambridge University, and it was before he went to the Galapagos Islands. He was on an early expedition that was mapping this Cambrian rock strata, and that's where he began to learn about these fossils. And during this time, as a young, right out of Cambridge, and was a field assistant for Adam Sedgwick, who was probably one of the preeminent geologists in the world at that time. So that was Darwin's first exposure to it. So we went into Wales, and we followed the route that Darwin went during this time, where he learned about the Cambrian, and then we also went down to southern Wales. That was in northern Wales. We also went down to southern Wales, where many of the fossils that Darwin originally was introduced to had been discovered. So a lot of filming in Wales, also in Cambridge University. And then we also did some filming in the Galapagos Islands, unrelated to the fossils, but part of Darwin's story. So that's off the coast of Ecuador in South America. So we ended up covering a lot of ground.
Well, yeah, I guess when you're tracing Darwin's steps, that's that's what's required of a movie that would do that. That's really
right.
amazing.
Right, and it was good because it really gave the film a lot of scope. I mean, you look at it and these really some very stunning locations and very, very diverse geographically and in terms of the story, and I don't know that I've ever worked on a single film where we've had such a wide breadth of geographical locations that were involved. So that made it very, very interesting and challenging. But it's the kind of challenges you enjoy when you do this type of work.
Now, were you actually there personally at the Burgess Shale? And
yeah, we work with small crews. I'm producer, writer, director, carry the gear guy, clean out the rooms, you know, drive the car. Yeah, we work with small crews, and 4 of us, including my son, who was in law school at the time. I said, "You need a break. Come and carry the gear for Dad." So he came with me and lug gear around, and then Jerry Harned, who I work with, he's my partner at Illustra Media, and then we had another guy who was actually Jonathan Witt, who was writing a book with Steve Meyer on the Cambrian explosion at the time. He came to do some research. So basically the 4 of us and a guide, and we these kinds of documentaries, you tend to travel with smaller crews because you need to be mobile, and it just seems to work out better that way.
Now, this film, it does have a small crew. Actually, I was surprised by the number of experts you had to speak on the Cambrian, not just Steve Meyer and Paul Nelson,
right.
But also people that film audiences might not be as familiar with, Richard Sternberg.
Right.
And even Simon Conway Morris. What was it like interviewing all these different experts? And did you actually conduct those interviews?
Yeah, I did. It was very interesting. All brilliant guys with diverse points of view. Not so much diverse points of view, some, but different fields of expertise and kind of looked at this subject from slightly different viewpoints or areas of expertise. And Simon Conway Morris is at Cambridge University and really was in the early 70s. The Burgess Shale and the significance of the Burgess Shale, it's interesting because on August 30th of 1909, the Burgess Shale, the fossils there were discovered by Charles Walcott, and it was really one of the great fossil discoveries in history. because they were so well preserved, and these were the first complex animals that appeared on Earth, and it's the 100th year anniversary of that, and so we were working with Simon Conway Morris in the 1970s. He and two other guys, Morris was a graduate student at the time, went to the Smithsonian where all these fossils, over 60,000 fossils that Walcott had excavated, were down in the basement, basically, and these guys pulled them all out and really began the first comprehensive study of what was down there and made discoveries that no one had any idea what these, I mean, there was an idea of what they represented, but no one fully understood it, and Morris and two others made spectacular discoveries and really sort of put these fossils in the Cambrian explosion on the map scientifically, and so we interviewed Morris at Cambridge, talking primarily about his work on the Burgess Shale. He's a brilliant paleobiologist in his own right. He's written several books, and then Steve Meyer, Paul Nelson, Paul Chin, all affiliated with Discovery Institute, of course, had done a tremendous amount of work on the Cambrian explosion over the years. Paul Chin took us to China. He teaches at the University of San Francisco. Doug Axe, who's with Biologic Institute, molecular biologist, and was interviewed specifically on the aspects of molecular biology. And Richard Sternberg is a developmental an evolutionary biologist, but he specializes in developmental biology.
Right.
And that was an area that Paul Nelson had done a lot of work in. And then we interviewed James Valentine, who's really, in terms of evolutionary biology, one of the just paramount titans in that field. He's at the University of California at Berkeley. And Jonathan Wells with Discovery Institute, again, who's done a tremendous amount of work on the Cambrian explosion for his book, Cycons of Evolution. And he also has done a lot of work on developmental biology. So we had guys that were really looking at this from every possible angle, and it helps the film a lot. You get a really full perspective of what's going on here, and it was, you know, these projects are always very interesting. Best parts of them are interviewing people of this caliber who have devoted much of their life to studying these things, and you know, their insights are great. So I always enjoy doing these types of interviews.
I can see why, after viewing the movie. What are your hopes for Darwin's Dilemma? I mean, after you take this really ambitious project ranging all over so many different locations and taking in so many different expert views on the Cambrian explosion and presenting it to this audience, what do you hope they take away from it?
Well, I mean, it's the third part of a trilogy. It truly is. I think Unlocking the Mystery of Life, Privileged Planet, and Darwin's Dilemma, in many sense, in a very real sense, are connected.
And absolutely.
The whole picture of the scientific case for design and all the work that Steve Meyer and Paul Nelson and Jonathan Wells and so many others have done, Michael Behe and Phil Johnson, and, you know, just all the great work that so many have done, you know, we've tried to distill basically in 3.5 hours, I mean, the total running time of this trilogy. The books, we've tried to distill the scientific case for intelligent design. These aren't religious films. They don't deal with the theological aspects of design. Certainly those implications are there, but we really set out to do films that could be viewed from an objective scientific perspective. And so this Darwin's Dilemma is the finalization of this trilogy, and presents arguments that the other two films didn't make, and the other two films also present arguments that aren't included in Darwin's Dilemma. So I think when you look at the argument from the fossil record is a spectacular argument that is easy to grasp because Darwin predicted that evolution would leave a trail of small incremental steps and evidence for these things, and it should be there, and it's not, and it's an argument that's easily grasped, and I like that. That appealed to me about this film, because we're making films not for PhD scientists. We want the science to be able to hold up for them, but we want people that don't have, you know, whose science extends through 10th grade biology in high school, that might be the extent of it formally, that you would be able to understand this and see the significance of it. So this argument's a very good one. I think the ones in the other films are too, but this is one that's particularly easy to understand. It's very visual. We devoted, when one of the reasons it took so long to make the film is because there's an enormous amount of computer animation in this film. We're recreating animals and a time in the Earth's history that no one was there to document with cameras. What we have left are fossil evidence, and which is very good, but you still don't know what color these animals were and, you know, details and the like. And yet we wanted to elevate the film beyond just looking at the fossils. We wanted to recreate what was going on when this occurred. And so we had to rely heavily on computer animation, as we always do. But this was more animation and more complicated animation than we've ever done before. And the animation alone took 2 years. This was with an animator at Joseph Condylis Light Productions in North Carolina, working nonstop, you know, 6 or 7 days a week, 12, 13, 14 hours a day for 2 years on this stuff. And he did a brilliant job, and it makes the film really come alive. And so we're hoping that with Darwin's Dilemma, as we did with Unlocking a Privileged Planet, that people who have extensive science backgrounds will appreciate it and say, you know, that's an objective, strong, well-thought, well-reasoned presentation of the evidence, whether I agree with it or not. And that people who don't have extensive science backgrounds will be able to watch it and understand it and say, that's a compelling argument for the existence of intelligent design in the universe. And that's when, you know, it's a long answer to your question, what are our hopes for the film? But those are our hopes for the film, that it will be taken seriously from a scientific standpoint and yet be accessible to as wide an audience as we can make it.
Well, I think your hopes should be realized if our viewings are any indicator, and if the audience response was any indication either. Just all the feedback we've gotten so far has been really positive, and not just on enjoying the film for its scientific content, but also just to view it and take it in. It really is an aesthetic experience as well, and I commend you and your crew for that. That really is wonderful, the way you brought it to life, this whole prehistoric world. And I guess one more question for you, off the topic of Darwin's Dilemma, but what's next for Illustra Media now that you've completed this trilogy?
Jerry Harnett and I are announcing our retirement from filmmaking next week. I've been at this whole, no, we're not. You feel that way in the middle of these films, and I'd be totally remiss here, and I want to give the right impression. Every one of these films is an enormous collaborative effort. We work with small crews, but there's a lot of people involved, and Jerry Harnett does all of our editing and supervises all of our post-production, and you know, just does everything, and we've worked together since 1984, which is an eternity in this kind of work, because we either kill each other or love each other, you know, working so closely together. And he is an absolute brilliant guy and has been along every step of the way in everything we're doing. And we have so many others. Mark Lewis, who's composed the music, and Tim Eaton, who's helped us in so many ways, photographically, editorially, Joseph Condilis. And it's a huge collaborative effort. And when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you go, this is the last time I'll ever do this. It's too hard. and yet my wife says it's always like, yeah, when we have four boys, and each time after each one, she made me swear, okay, never again. I can't do it. It's too hard. And then the next week it'd be, boy, let's have another boy here, another child. And, you know, you sort of forget about the difficulties of the delivery when you get through it. But the process is an enormously collaborative one, and we've had a tremendous relationship with Discovery Institute. Steve Meyer, Paul Nelson just poured so much into this film, and Jonathan Wells. I mean, you know, these guys, it's a privilege to work with them, because they're brilliant guys, and they're great guys to work with, and we're basically, you know, taking the material that they've done and the work they've done and trying to make it accessible to the largest possible audience. But, you know, I look at all this, and working with these type of people, it does bring you back, even though it's really hard work and sometimes it's frustrating and things don't go exactly the way I want them to go. It's the opportunity to work with people of that caliber and that does bring you back. And we hope we've got other projects we're still planning more work in this area of intelligent design, and there's a lot more work to be done beyond these three films. The research just keeps expanding, and you know, great research that's going on in so many areas right now. And I've got I think another decade left here with this. I hope so. And I think that, we've got more projects in mind, and I'm sure we'll sit down with Steve and we'll kind of chart our path as to where we go next with it. But I think it'll be in this area of intelligent design.
Wow. Well, very exciting. Thank you so much for joining us today, Ladd. Where should our listeners go to learn more about Alestra Media? Online.
Well, we have a website, www.alestramedia.com, and that will outline productions we've done, give you some information about how to, if you're interested in purchasing the DVDs, by hundreds, by thousands, keep us going. you'll have all the information to do that, what I'd like, you know, the big part of what we're doing too, and I know that you have a real good following through the internet. We don't just release these films in the United States. We translate them. We're up to over more than 20 languages now, and
oh, wow.
We've had tremendous response overseas. And so if there's anybody out there that's interested in seeing this translated into a language, we'd love to talk to you about it. And it's been a very exciting part of the whole process, is to get these films beyond the United States and beyond the English speaking world into China and into so many other countries. So that's been a good part of the work too. And we're actually doing some it's pretty much an ongoing process with the translation. So it's another good part of all this, and there's information about that on our website too. So alestramedia.com is a good place to start. You can get connected to other things from there.
That's great. We'll include that link in the podcast. Thank
great.
You again, Ladd, so much. And for all this work in Darwin's Dilemma, comes out on DVD September 25th. Is that correct?
Well, I see. Maybe a little early. No, I think the street date on it is September 15th. It'll start appearing September 8th. It should be full blown out there by September 15th.
Okay.
So September 15th.
Great. Thank you so much. For ID the Future, welcome. This is Annika Smith with the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.